Welcome to the Monitor Daily Podcast. It's Monday. Thanks for joining us. I'm Kim Campbell, reading for Trudy Palmer.
And I'm Jingnan Peng.
Last week, a few of us enjoyed a good laugh on Slack, an instant messaging app we use at the Monitor. One of the options for the day's viewfinder photo showed people traversing the nearly 1,700-foot Eroka pedestrian bridge, suspended 574 feet above a canyon in Portugal. That's roof level for some buildings with 50-plus floors. The first Slack response was, "I am never walking on that bridge," followed seconds later by, "Me neither." Someone else added a rolling on the floor laughing emoji. Then we got back to work. But the truth is, the Christian Science Monitor builds skyscraper-high bridges all the time, with words and images, not steel. Bridges to an island, weighing the trade-off between tourism and tradition, to the heart of an idea, like respect or fairness, or to a new solution in education or the environment. Just last week, the Monitor took readers to all of those places and more, offering an aerial view with enough history and context to orient them in Jerusalem, Tybee Island, a deli in Italy, and a garden in Washington, D.C. But here's where the analogy breaks down. On the Eroka Bridge, there are only bird's-eye views. On the Monitor's bridges, you get close-ups, too. Proofs of humanity, seen in hope, courage, patience, and persistence. Best of all, there's no fretting about walking at skyscraper heights. It's a journey of head and heart, not feet. Now to today's stories. Our first story, the original care packages sent to a devastated Europe 75 years ago conveyed an important message: Americans cared. Even today, this soft power icon factors in U.S. efforts to win hearts and minds.
Today, the care package is a household term, describing perhaps a box of mom's cookies sent by mail. But 75 years ago, the original CARE packages from the Cooperative for American Remittances to Europe arrived in France. They were boxes of basic foodstuffs and other essentials sent by Americans to a devastated and demoralized Europe after World War II. The packages carried mostly food, but for many Europeans, they brought forms of sustenance the war had severely depleted, optimism, and a renewed faith in humanity. We were very hungry. The country was destroyed. So the 30 or so packages we received in my very large family were what kept us going, says Peter Molt, a German historian who was a teenager in Stuttgart when packages marked USA arrived. In many ways, the care package was one of the first examples of hearts and minds soft power, in that it married a basic humanitarian impulse to help others with America's aim for a prosperous and free Europe. The packages, Mr. Moltz recalls, were part of a larger vision for Germany's future that would be peaceful and imbued with a deep sense of solidarity with people in need. We were happy to be in the zone assigned to the Americans, he says. For us, it was a new start with a new future for democracy. This story was reported by Howard LaFranchi for the Monitor.
The second article in our Respect Project series focuses on a Canadian TV show that offers political rivals an opportunity to share perspectives and experiences respectfully. Viewers love it.
It's called Political Blind Date. And far from being a hokey reality TV show for the political set, the popular Canadian series aims to break down walls around contentious issues, from gun rights to climate change. Take the moment Toronto City Councillor Gary Crawford confided to colleague Shelley Carroll that his daughter has a disability. Ms. Carroll, who raised a daughter diagnosed with autism, replied instinctively, "Oh, Gary." An empathy so obvious in just two words. It's not that the two didn't know one another. They'd worked together in City Hall for years, but more often than not, they were battling over city finances. This meeting at a coffee shop was a way to set the stage for engaging one another with the time and respect that complex problems require. With filming of the fifth season underway, about 50 politicians have participated, spending 2 days together with each other's constituents. The show has been optioned to the United Kingdom, France, Israel, and South Africa, and is being shot in the United States. It's a moment where people are trying to heal and listen to each other, says director Mark Johnston. This story was reported by Sarah Miller-Yana in Toronto for The Monitor.
Far-right sentiment has crept into the French military, and while some officials are downplaying its significance, it's prompting reflection about the army's approach to diversity.
Today's French army strives to be modern, ethnically diverse, and driven. But that image is being tested after more than 1,000 former service members and 18 on active duty signed an open letter published in an extreme right-wing magazine last month. They warned of a coup and civil war if the French government failed to take action to uphold the country's, quote, civilizational values, unquote, against what they described as suburban hordes. As French society becomes more diverse and the Islamist terrorist threat continues, such talk is evidence of existing pockets of protectionism within the army. Those hoping for a return to French conservative values and a nostalgia for la vieille France. It has highlighted an underlying tension within both the military and broader French society. It has also prompted a moment of reflection for the French army as it looks to improve diversity and understanding within its ranks. A small percentage of the military is used to a bourgeois army. They're nostalgic for traditional France, but it's totally impossible to go back, says Jean-Yves Camus, a political analyst at the Paris-based Institute for International and Strategic Affairs, a think tank. He adds, the military is now an army of professionals, with more people from a minority background joining and giving their lives for our country. This story was reported by Colette Davidson in Paris for The Monitor.
Big tech firms were already under fire for not paying taxes in the places where they earn their revenue. With record profits in the pandemic, they may face a growing push to redefine tax fairness in the digital age.
Firms like Facebook and Google are among the richest companies in the world, all the more so after a pandemic has tipped consumers further away from brick-and-mortar commerce. Yet these same companies often pay little or nothing in taxes in the places they rely on for much of their profits. So as governments around the globe look for ways to pay for their growing costs, some are tapping a new brand of revenue, digital service taxes. These levies are aimed squarely at core activities of big tech firms. Spain, France, and the state of Maryland are among the places trying it. But finance experts say more effective solutions may be found through international bridge building. The United States recently joined in a 139-nation effort designed to make digital services taxes redundant. The goal is a system that reallocates corporate taxing rights among nations while also agreeing on a global minimum corporate tax rate. Georgetown University law professor Lillian Falhaba is hopeful the approach can meet demands for reform. She says, you can't really fix something on your own as a country in our really interconnected world. This story was reported by Erica Page for The Monitor.
For Najari Smith, people and communities are a lot like bikes. No matter what they've been through, they're never broken beyond repair.
The Richmond, California neighborhood where Najari Smith established his bike shop is not wealthy by any traditional measure. But Mr. Smith has nothing but enthusiasm for the community's potential. He understands challenges like generational poverty and sparse opportunity, and his advocacy is for those most vulnerable. Growing up, I always wanted everybody to have enough, he says. That's why he chose to make Rich City Rides a cooperative. We share the stress, we share the profits, we share the challenges, and we share the victories, all evenly, says Mr. Smith, who also wants to help incubate other cooperative businesses in the area. To encourage more residents to cycle, Rich City Rides also operates as a nonprofit. It hosts community rides and runs a program for young people that teaches bike mechanics and enables them to earn their own bikes. Rich City Rides' success has inspired other small businesses to open, helping put the neighborhood on a long-awaited upswing. They refuse to give up on the fact that we have a beautiful city, Ms. Beckles says. This story was reported by Erica Page in Richmond, California, for The Monitor.
Now, commentary from The Monitor's editorial board on space junk. For 10 days starting in late April, the world was warned that a large Chinese rocket in space would enter the atmosphere and scatter debris at an unknown point. On May 8th, the 23-ton rocket finally did plunge to Earth in the Indian Ocean. While the re-entry was harmless, the heightened anxiety put a fresh spotlight on whether all spacefaring nations, not just China, are any closer to setting a global norm for disposing of millions of pieces of space junk. The quick answer is yes. According to a new RAND report, much of the world now has a growing recognition that the rapid pace in space launches requires progress toward responsible space behavior. One reason is that more nations are quick to criticize each other for a close miss, even if they have a history of causing space debris. Another reason is that more nations are trying to write rules of the road for space. More progress is possible if the major powers are transparent about what objects they have in space. After the near miss of China's rocket, the world may finally be ready for a global solution to all the litter aloft. That's a wrap for the news. You can find the full-length versions of these stories in today's issue, or at csmonitor.com/daily. Thanks for starting your week with us. Come back tomorrow when we'll look at what Germany's child benefit, the world's largest, does and doesn't accomplish, and what the U.S. might learn from it. Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor shares how we can look to God as a parental figure. You can find the column in today's issue, or at csmonitor.com/daily. We want to give a quick thanks to our staff, including today's audio production team, Jeff Turton and Nick Roll.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor. Copyright 2021.